Welcome to Corner of the Galaxy, the show that talks 100% LA Galaxy soccer. We're glad you could join us. Now it's time to sit back and relax as your hosts navigate through the twisting, turning, but never boring world of the five-time MLS Cup champion, LA Galaxy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Corner of the Galaxy on cornerofthegalaxy.com. I'm your host, Josh Gessman, flying solo tonight. Fresh off an airplane, I was up in NorCal on business. Just got back about an hour and a half, 2 hours ago. Glad I could make it in time for this live show. Glad we have a lot to talk about as well. LA Galaxy traveling to Minnesota. Minnesota coming up. We'll sort of take a look at that game towards the end here, so keep an eye on that one. And then we're also going to talk about the LA Galaxy's win over the New York Red Bulls. A little bit surprising. I'm not going to say that it wasn't surprising. It surprised me. If it didn't surprise you, you probably weren't really paying attention to how bad the Galaxy were up until that point. Looks like a little turnaround for Kurt Adolfo and the LA Galaxy, though, so we'll have a bunch to talk about. I'm going to tell you right now that if you want to call in, if it's something that you want to get in on right away, the phone lines are already open, 949-734-4217. I'd be glad to have your input throughout the show, so please feel free to give me a ring. Probably go for about 40, 45 minutes tonight. I don't think we need to discuss this to death. Plus, you're going to get sick and tired of hearing me, and I'm going to get sick and tired of talking to myself for a little while. So let's see if we can get through this. With the LA Galaxy coming off a 3-1 comprehensive victory over the New York Red Bulls. Again, I think if you saw that coming, if you saw that scoreline coming, you're either clairvoyant, which is great for you. I'd like to have some lottery numbers if that's the case, or you just are that optimistic person. And even I'm the optimistic person. I get yelled at by you guys all the time saying, Josh, you're too optimistic. All right. There's no way. This team is horrible. And I had them losing this game. This was a for sure loss. And instead, the LA Galaxy came out in quite actually a domineering fashion, really took it to the Red Bulls. It wasn't that close of a game. You can go back and you can look at the possession, which is clearly in favor of the Red Bulls, as it should be at their home. They had almost 70% possession, 67.6% possession to 32.4%. Possession for the LA Galaxy, but it was two early goals, both from Roman Alessandrini in the 8th and 9th minute. The free kick, very first goal that he ends up putting in, and Yella Von Dom ends up being the decoy on, and then a 9th minute goal that was assisted by Giovanni Dos Santos, and then Gio gets a penalty kick goal in the 78th minute. The only sort of bright spot for the Red Bulls there was in the 3rd minute of the stoppage time, I should say. When Daniel Royer got a goal that snuck underneath Brian Rowe. If we're ringing alarm bells right now about anything, perhaps Brian Rowe should be an alarm bell right now. Last two games for me, he has not played well. That ball got squeaked underneath his arms. It's a question mark. And Diop is still sort of day-to-day as far as I can understand. Still out with the hip injury. Still hasn't made it to the 18. John Kempen was in the 18 for this game, so we'll have to see what his status is. But for me, Brian Rowe has a lot to tighten up if he's going to go against any better team. And let's be honest, I don't want to sugarcoat this, and I don't want to give you false information. The LA Galaxy played well. They played with a lot of passion and energy, and they got on the board quickly. And hey, what do you know? They scored a goal first, the first time in 7 games. Seven of their first 9 games up until that point, they had allowed the first goal. So this is one where they actually get a goal, they get it early. They get out, they get a second goal a minute and 39 seconds later. It really was that comprehensive victory that you were looking for. But at the same time, let's not pretend that the LA Galaxy are some fixed magical team. New York Red Bulls were very, very poor on the night. They looked absolutely shell-shocked from the very beginning. That was their first loss at home. Their first loss in 19 straight games at home, basically. They've had draws, they've had wins, obviously, but they haven't lost. The record goes all the way back. So it was a long time coming, and the New York Red Bulls, they get absolutely dominated in their own building. Now, the good thing for them was there was only about 3 or 4 people there, so that's a good thing. All right, we got a first call. Let's see if we can get this person on. 951, who's this? Hey, Juan, hold on 1 second, buddy. I'm gonna hang up. I want you to call back. I messed up something, so I'm going to fix it. So give me like 10 seconds and then call me back, all right? All right, let's see if I can fix this on the fly as we're talking. We want to make sure I get everybody's stuff in here. Like I said, I scrambled in from the airport, and so just barely got here. In time to basically do the show. I didn't even know if I was going to do it. That's sort of why I've been a little bit MIA. So Juan, I think Juan's going to call right back here if I got that right. So just didn't have the right settings in the right place. So as soon as he calls back, we'll be able to get him. But I mean, the Red Bulls were bad. And the good thing for them is there was like 12 people there to see it. It was Sunday. It was Mother's Day, which if you're an LA Galaxy fan, you certainly can't make fun of Red Bulls for that. That it's Sunday, that it's Mother's Day, and then it was also retiring Derek Jeter's number night in New York. And so if you add all those things together, you can certainly understand why there was nobody there. But at the same time, this attendance thing is starting to be a little interesting. And we talked about teams sort of pandering to the national agenda and exactly what that means in terms of attendance and sort of how that all comes in. But let's see, go back to the phones now. 951, who's this again?
It's Juan.
Hey, Juan. Okay, perfect, Juan. Thank you. I appreciate that. We got you loud and clear now. What do you want to talk about?
Okay, well, number one, I still want an off file, but that's not the conversation I want to have. My question is, the more I was looking at this game without Triple J, should we start to look at Gio differently than this forward and more as attacking or more even just central midfielder? Because we kind of want him close to the box because he has all of that ability and great first touch and all that stuff. But it also seems like he gets too nervous, like in front of the box. And you kind of see that all the time from him, right? So wouldn't it be better to think of him less as this forward and more as this purely attacking midfielder kind of player?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to that. And there's a lot of different things. You know, first of all, he's always going to play now underneath Giassi's artist, at least as long as Giassi's playing up there, he's going to play it. So they're not playing side by side, but that gives Gio freedom to do things. And so I think you can think of him more as a central attacking midfielder, especially when you have Baggio, Husic, and Joao Pedro back there as sort of more defensive midfielders. Although Joao Pedro, without Jermaine Jones there, gets further forward and actually is able to connect a lot better through the midfield and finds the forwards. I think you're going to find that Giovanni Dos Santos is going to play the quote-unquote 10 role, which is that playmaking role, which allows him to do anything that we're talking about here. It's going to allow him to drop back into the midfield and sort of take that space where Jermaine Jones was taking that space. But it's also going to allow him to do the things that happened, like the assist on Roman Alessandrini, where he gets out wide and is able to pull the ball back and find space. So Gio is a space finder now, and I think that suits him the best way. I think the Galaxy have tried to pigeonhole him on the right-hand side, Juan, and I think that didn't work very well, right? And then we've seen him sort of try to do the straight-out striker role, and that doesn't work very well, in my opinion. And I think the best you can do for Giovanni Dos Santos right now, and if you want him to succeed, is you have to let him roam and sort of find his own space and hope that he doesn't get in other people's ways. Does that sound like a sort of what you were thinking?
Yeah, it's just going back to the point I was making earlier, it seems like he gets very nervous around the box or like all that pressure like builds on him compared to, you know, someone like Romain Alessandrini or Keane when in his peak, you know, Gio seems to get more, you know, nervous again. And it seems like it's more of that expectation of him there as opposed to when he's, again, a little more central than attacking midfielder. I just feel like it's a better position for him though, just because of how good he is at passing the ball. And I'm thinking last year when he had a pass to Emmanuel Boateng against Real Salt Lake when he scored.
Yep.
It's just less even 10, more of a, maybe if he could get a little more stamina, more of a number eight kind of player.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. I think that the way the Galaxy are going to utilize him is let him be sort of whatever he wants to be right now. And I think they have the flexibility in the lineup without Jermaine Jones in there for that not to hurt them completely. Roman Alessandrini's kind of that guy. So you can have Gio be that guy as well. That's probably okay. It's whenever you get three or four or five of these guys that think that they can go anywhere they want that the real problems sort of stem. And I would say that against the New York team, the Galaxy were very, very organized in terms of letting people get forward, but covering for those runs and making sure that they had people behind the ball. And they did well defensively overall. For Gio, I'm going to tell you this. It all comes down to confidence for him. I mean, we've seen him absolutely destroy the U.S. men's national team over the years with ridiculous goals where he wasn't nervous at all. So I think what you should be hoping for as a Galaxy fan is that these goals he's getting, the penalty kick goal, the assist, the goal in the game before that, so that way he's starting to feel a little more comfortable and starting to get that momentum rolling forward for him. If he can get those things going, I think you're going to see those quote unquote nerves and his nervousness around, or it's not even just the nervousness. It's not being able to take the time when you know you have the time to do the right thing. Right. And I think if you get all those things that Gio can be a good player, but I'm not going to tell you that Giovanni Dos Santos is going to be the same guy who scored 15 goals and had something like 11 or 12 or 13 assists last year. I don't know that he's going to repeat that. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him this year because he's supposed to be the guy, and he has never been guy.
I think he's like 28 or something. He should be, and he still seems like he's like a 21-year-old or something. He's got to mature himself or something. But the other thing is just, you know, kind of like managing the team right now. That's why I think it's probably easier to probably see him more as a central midfielder so he can start building that way. But yeah, that's the only my two cents on what I was observing over the game.
Awesome, Juan. I appreciate the call, buddy. You have a great weekend. Hopefully Galaxy gets some wins for you, all right?
Exactly. All right, have a good one, Josh.
All right, thanks. All right, there goes Juan. Thanks for the call. If anybody else has a call, you want to continue any conversation, you want to talk about something, anything Galaxy-related, I'm here for you at least until 8 o'clock. I know I said 45 minutes, but if you guys are going to make a call and have some fun, then I'm going to have some fun as well. So please come on in. But, I mean, the Jermaine Jones absence, we keep talking about it. If you listen to the Monday night show, you can sort of understand where Kevin and I came from in terms of, is Jermaine Jones the issue, and was that clear and present and evident against the New York Red Bulls? And I'm still of the opinion that yes, but no, and I'll explain, is that Jermaine Jones leaving when he did was I think it helps the Galaxy and clearly, but it was also Yelena Von Dam and the benching that happened against Chicago and the fact that Yelena Von Dam was the captain and on the field and starting for this team against New York. And I think there was lots of questions about that. I think people were thinking, you know, that he wouldn't start. And to me, hearing what I did from guys and hearing about practice, listen, I try to find out about practice almost every single day. I don't get to go to training a lot, but I have people who do go to training, and I have people who are participating in training that I can talk to and sort of find out how things are going. But the way that Yella practiced all through the last week, he was focused, he was serious. The LA Galaxy had, I think, somebody said, some of their best practices of the year. So you look at all of that, that's great. And that's what you wanted to see, and clearly Yella has put himself back in a position to be focused, and you saw it. MLS Team of the Week. Yelena Von Dam was a beast against New York Red Bulls. That is the Yelena Von Dam that was from last year, 2016 Yella, who was a fan favorite and who was just so smart with the way that he played, and he dominated people. He absolutely dominated people. That's what you got against New York. That was the performance. And if you want to get upset at Kurt Arnolfo for benching Yelena Von Dam when he did, granted, I think it was probably too late in terms of how many games it took and all these things, but don't get mad at Kurt Arnolfo. Get mad at Yelena Von Dam because he had not been pulling his weight up to this point. And he had not been the same person that LA Galaxy expected him to be. All right? And so that's what he was in this game. Ramon Alessandrini, 2 goals. And he drew the penalty kick that that Gio put down. Ramon Alessandrini now has 5 goals scored on the road. He leads MLS in that category. Are you kidding me? This was a guy that I remember several people on Twitter. See, I'm not stupid. I remember these things. Several people on Twitter after 3 games were ready to be done with. I can't believe he's horrible. This romaine lettuce Alessandrini guy. Who the heck is this guy? Nobody knows. It's ridiculous. Blah, blah, blah. All this stuff. He's a good player. Right? There's some stat in there that says like Roman. See, now I'm saying romaine. I screw it up once and now I want to go back. That Ramon Alessandrini has the same number of goals through his first 10 games with the Galaxy as Landon Donovan did. They're the same. So it's interesting. Clearly, I'm not saying they're the same, but the LA Galaxy got something out of this. If you want to yell and scream about the coaching and the scouting about, you know, how they didn't get a good player in Joao Pedro and they spent all this money too, that's fine. You have the right to do that. I agree. But you have to admit also that they got it right with Ramon Alessandrini. They got it really right with that guy. That guy loves Los Angeles. There are two guys on this team right now that love Los Angeles more than you or I or anybody combined. And I love where I live. I love living, in Southern California and all this stuff. There are two guys on that team who were not born in this country who love Los Angeles more than anything you know. And those two guys are Yelena Von Dahm and Roman Alessandrini. I don't know if you could ask for a person or people that love the club, love the city as much as those two guys do. So if you're looking for character guys, if you're looking for people that are that bleed, you know, the colors of the LA Galaxy, those two guys are it. And listen, Yelena Von Dahm gets knocked because he had a poor start to the season, and he may have been one of the reasons the locker room was having problems. Yella has to take that as the captain, and he has to turn that, and he has to turn this into a good season. And I think the Galaxy sort of got a little bit of a turn. I mean, Jermaine Jones is the same thing there. We're not talking about him because he's injured, but I think the LA Galaxy play better without him. That doesn't mean that he's also, as Wendy says, that he's also not one of the most talented players on the field when he's on there. He can be both. He could be both one of the most talented and not fit within the system of the LA Galaxy. Those things can happen. But for me, the only real sort of, you know, red mark, we'll say the red mark, the black mark against the LA Galaxy was Bradley Diallo's second yellow card. For me, if I'm Kurt Anolfo, here's the thing. I know a lot of people have said, hey, Kurt should have subbed him, you know, whenever he was starting to make some tackles, because he already had a yellow card he picked up in the 27th minute, and then he started to get a little more careless. And he could have had one even before he actually got his second yellow and got sent off with a red card. And so Kurt should have taken him off the field earlier. And the perfectly reasonable argument. I will tell you why, in my mind, knowing Kurt, watching him play with LA, watching him coach LA Galaxy 2, and just watching him how he coaches. I mean, I've seen a bunch of games with him in charge. He trusts his guys, and I'm sure he went and talked to Bradley at halftime and said, hey, don't get another yellow card, all right? This is part of you maturing as a player. This is part of you being a defender. I don't want to sub defenders if I don't have to, so I need you to do this. So I'm going to need to sub the guys who are in front of you. I'm going to need to sub the midfielders. I'm going to need to sub those guys, so you have to learn how to play with a yellow card, and he didn't do it. And so one, a failure on Kurt Anolfo not to pull him out? Yeah, you could say that. The bigger failure, Bradley Diallo. Again, understanding the game. He's young. He's going to learn. But now you don't have him against Minnesota United. And Diallo had a very good game against the New York Red Bulls. Remember, that right back role is going to get attacked over and over and over again. It's on the weaker side of the LA Galaxy defense. That's the side Steris is on. Steris and Diallo, or Steris and Nathan Smith, or Steris and Rafa Garcia, are a weaker duo than Yelena Von Dahm and Ashley Cole. This is like basic stuff. I know some of you are just threw something at the radio or however you're listening. You threw your phone across and say, Josh, this is elementary stuff. I know what it is. No, but I'm telling you, some people don't understand that. They're going to get attacked. It's one of the reasons that Diallo led the club in tackles over the last two or three games. Right, because he was constantly under attack. So he's not, he needs to get better. That's unacceptable from him. And he's young, he needs to learn from that. And he'll have the next game off. And if we're looking at who's going to replace him, I think the obvious choice right now is Nathan Smith. Nathan Smith, not as much speed, doesn't have as big a physicality as Diallo. Diallo has some great creativity, by the way. On that right-hand side, too, the LA Galaxy are going to miss him. I mean, this is the right back argument that we've been having since forever. But they're going to miss him not being in this lineup. Nathan Smith coming in, I think Nathan Smith has a chance to step up and win some more starting time if he can do well in this. Kurt is all about that. I understand how that is. But yeah, this the New York Red Bulls game, and before we move on and sort of, you know, put this game to bed, I want to say it's one game. One game. This LA Galaxy team has been very bad over the first 11 games. They had their slowest start ever through 9 games. They've only played 10 games. I already gave them the other game against Minnesota. But they had the slowest start they've ever had in the last 10 years in 9 games. The win gives them 11 points in 10 games, which matches them with the 2009 and 2012 seasons. Both of those seasons turned out okay for the LA Galaxy. 2009 was tough. But still, it got to where you wanted to be. That was the penultimate game. Am I saying that this is what this team is going to do now? They're going to make a run to the MLS Cup? Yes, of course. it's just one of these things that's you're going to have to keep an eye on. We will continue to update charts. If you go to cornerofthegalaxy.com, you can see where our charts are. You can see all of our stuff that's there. It's one of those things that if the Galaxy can get another road win, which we're going to start talking about this Minnesota game, if they can get another road win, things change on that chart really quick. The LA Galaxy are just very, very, very edge out of the playoff spot right now. And if I would have told you that 3 weeks ago, you would have called me crazy. But LA Galaxy are in seventh, just one spot, 2 points back behind Vancouver. They're right on the edge of being back and actually a competitive team. And I will tell you that in the last three halves of soccer, the LA Galaxy have been a competitive team. Look at the Philadelphia Union. Didn't win a game all year, but won like two or three in a row now. All right, you're starting to see this league. The league likes to regress to the mean. It likes to fall back. You get teams that start out real quickly, and then they fall back. And you get teams that start out real slow, and they seem to climb to the center. Everybody seems to meet in the center, and I think the Western Conference is going to be competitive. If you look at Seattle, remember Seattle absolutely obliterated the Galaxy. Seattle's been horrible this year. All right, they just got embarrassed again. So the Galaxy, having only played 10 games, are a little behind the curve right now. So let's watch and see how it's going. I mean, if you want to talk about the other trend or the other thing that's worrying, right? I said, hey, goalkeeper alarm bells. The other thing that's worrying and something we touched on the Monday show was Giassi Zardes. And what is going to happen in that development there? That has to start producing some goals. That combination of Giassi Zardes and Giovanni Dos Santos has to start combining to score some goals for the LA Galaxy. LA Galaxy without a goal from the run of play from a striker this year through now 10 games. That is a big deal. That is a worry thing. All right. That's one of these things you want to worry about. Not any striker that they've put on has been successful in that striker, in that nine role, anywhere near that. All right. It doesn't matter who it is. So we ask, and we have been asking, is it the player? Is it the system? What is going on that the strikers can't score goals? You look at people like Emmanuel Boateng and Roman Alessandrini, there seems to be lots of space for those guys. You know, at what point are the LA Galaxy just running decoys out in front of everybody? Is Giassi Zardes just a decoy? He needs to start scoring goals. I will certainly tell you this. His form has not been up to standard. And yes, he was injured. Yes, he didn't play since August of last year. But now he's got, what, 5-6 games under his belt now? You need to start seeing some progression. I'm not sure we're seeing that progression. He looks like he's in better shape. It doesn't look like a shape issue. It looks like he still has the speed. It looks like he still has some strength, but his finishing isn't there. And that's something that should be worried about you, that you should be worried about with the LA Galaxy right now. And can he turn it around? Absolutely. He starts scoring goals against Minnesota. It's, you know, all forgotten. That's how these things work, especially with strikers. You get them going, you can start to get something to bounce off Giassi Zardes and go into the goal. I don't care how it happens. All right, I don't care if Roman Alessandrini is 6 yards away from goal. He shanks it sideways. It hits Giassi right between the eyes and goes into the goal. Giassi isn't going to care. The LA Galaxy aren't going to care. But get this guy going. Something needs to happen here. And by the way, if I'm Giovanni Dos Santos and Roman Alessandrini draws a penalty kick inside the box and he's sitting on two goals, I let him have the third goal. That's just me. Just me. All right? Maybe I'm not a striker. Well, everybody knows I'm not a striker. All right. Maybe on this show, I'm the striker. Am I the 10 on this show? What am I? I'm just like a solid 6, aren't I? Story of my college career right there. Just a solid 6. But anyway, you know, it's about getting these guys going. It's the same with Giovanni Dos Santos. Let's make something happen for the run of play now. It's time. All right. Gio needs to be the guy who scored 15 goals last year. Otherwise, the LA Galaxy aren't going anywhere. They're not going anywhere, like, soon. It's gonna stall out. You can find Roman Alessandrini. You can mark him out of the game. Just because the New York Red Bulls couldn't do it doesn't mean that other teams haven't figured it out. People in the chat room, Scott says Josh looks like a goalie. I did play goalie, Scott, so it's because of the face. I look like I get hit in the head a lot. Is that it? Probably true. But, yeah. There are other guys on the bench that can start helping out. Yes, Jack McBean. Go ahead, yell at me all you want. I don't care. I think somebody said, how could I ever recommend Jack McBean after his 8 minutes on the field against the New York Red Bulls? Really? your team's winning 3-0 and you're going to judge a striker when he's supposed to be holding up the ball, getting in the way, and killing off the clock. Let's get these guys some minutes. Let's get Jack McBean in there. Let's get that Jack McInerney. You're not spending a ton of money on him. Give him a chance. Roll him out. Let's see what happens. All right? If I'm Anolfo, you need to start making these subs earlier up top. All right? Giassi Zardes gets 65 minutes. 70 minutes max. Let somebody else get in there and start developing a rhythm with the rest of these guys. Because if Giassi's not producing, it's time the LA Galaxy start finding somebody who can. And if the combination with Giovanni Dos Santos just doesn't work, hey, Giassi can come back and play midfield somewhere. Right? Means you're going to have to take somebody else off. Maybe Roman goes up and plays striker. I don't care. Need goals from the striker position. Midfielder goals are great. But there's only one guy who's really scoring on this team. It's been spread out over everybody else. I mean, there's more than that. But Roman Alessandrini has been the star of the season. Somebody said, where would the LA Galaxy be without Roman Alessandrini? My reply was 11 points less. I think that's pretty fair. If you don't think Roman Alessandrini has had that level of impact on this LA Galaxy team in 2017, then you're not paying attention. All right? And that's your job as fans, pay attention. That's what I do as a reporter. I pay attention. All right? So there's your homework. Who's going to score for the LA Galaxy besides Roman Alessandrini? Figure it out. All right, let's move on. We talked about it. We had fun. We did it. All right, New York Red Bulls, blah, 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 blah. I will say this, shots on target, 6-4. Remember all that possession that was totally slanted on the way of the New York Red Bulls? Not in shots. And 6 shots on target for the LA Galaxy. Look at those guys actually putting something on frame. Most of the time, it's like 3 shots, 4 shots total, and one of them hits the frame. Shoot more. Shoot on frame a lot more. Ball goes in. What do you know? Let's go to LA Galaxy team news. Giovanni Dos Santos was named to the preliminary Mexico roster for the June matches, so the World Cup qualifier versus Honduras and the United States, and also the 2017 FIFA Confederations Cup, as Mexico goes as the CONCACAF representative. He will join the Mexican national team June 4th, that is after the June 3rd DC United game, and then there's an international break. Yay, break, no soccer, boo. Well, there's international soccer, so I guess we can't really complain. Realistically, the Galaxy don't come back and play until June 17th versus Houston Dynamo, where the wonderful AJ De La Garza will return to StubHub Center for the very first time. All right, good news, bad news. I want to know what you guys think. This is a good question. You guys should call in on this one right here. I want to know what you're thinking. The LA Chargers, who have made StubHub Center their temporary home for 2017 and 2018, have now signed on for a third NFL season. They will be there until 2019, and this is because the new stadium that they're building, that the Rams are building and that the Chargers will then inhabit with the Rams, is now not going to open until 2020. You guys want to talk about construction for a second? All right. Not ready until the summer of 2020. Expect that to slip again. All right, you're talking to somebody who actually, this is actually one of my expertises. All right, this is what I do. So I'm in construction. I'm telling you right now that when you're talking about projects of this scope and this size, that dates move very, very easily. All right, it's not hard. It's not hard to be delayed. It's not hard to be stopped, especially in the city of Los Angeles, where it seems like every governmental entity wants a piece of the project and to slow it down. That is really what their job is in almost 100% of the time. Expect that. I will say this. LA Galaxy, StubHub Center, and Chargers, all this investment that's come in, basically $35 million has been invested in StubHub Center since 2013. That included that giant scoreboard that they can never seem to quite get the aspect ratio right, or there are so many ads on it that you have the same amount of screen size as you did with the old one. There's just my opinion if you think I'm wrong. But the Chargers now coming in. All right, good. See, this is what I like. This is what I like. All right. Let's see if we can get a call in here. 310, who's this?
This is Ronnie from Long Beach.
Hey, Ronnie, can you turn down your radio there so that way we make sure we don't hear anything in the background?
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, what do you got for me?
I want to talk about the Chargers or whatever football team that's supposed to be playing at the Globe Center.
Yep, yep. Tell me, what do you think? Good, bad? I mean, I'm thinking that bad is the way we're going here, but maybe you can surprise me.
Definitely bad. StubHub is the Galaxy Stadium soccer specific. They're going to rip up the grass. It's going to be lined everywhere. It's just, I know it's going to be extra money, but with all the Coliseum, all the stadiums that we have in L.A., I don't know why they would choose the StubHub Center.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be bad for the Galaxy.
Yeah, listen, I'll tell you this. This, if we want to be optimistic about it, the LA Galaxy and AEG are getting a ton of money for this in terms of the Chargers. So I'm hoping, and you've seen some of it, they are going to invest back in the stadium, so you're going to get some upgrades. But I think you're right. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is – now, it is a soccer-specific stadium, and we'll say that in quotation marks, all right, because it is.
Yeah,
but they've
exactly.
They've always played high school football there. They've always had special mm-hmm. events. We've seen that. No problems. That's fine. But when you're talking mm-hmm. about an NFL team, I mean, if you get into October and it rains a little bit, which it's Southern California,
exactly.
that could happen, and they play one mm-hmm. week, are you telling me that grass is going to be in perfect condition for the next week? Because right now they have it all set up, so that way the LA Galaxy play the night before every Charger home game where they're butted up against each other, all right? So it gives them the full
okay.
week. It gives them the full week to come okay. back and do it, so that's good. But then we get into playoffs and how that changes, so I mean, I'm not counting out the fact that you're going to be 100% right. In fact, I think there will be an impact to the field at some point in one of these three seasons. I mean, the odds are with
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
You know,
and now they're extending it or extra season or whatever.
They are.
That's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
Because I'm a fan who doesn't care at all about American football. So
right. I get it.
Listen, it's like...
a
negative for me.
I get it. And it totally makes sense. I understand why AEG is doing it. They're making money. I'm not going to, hey, whatever, that's their deal. But whenever it impacts the LA Galaxy, here's the thing though, right? This is the big thing that happens. Somebody in downtown Los Angeles is building a soccer specific stadium, and I don't think there's going to be any NFL games played there. And so, are you going to be, are people who have to get to choose between the LA Galaxy and LAFC as they're coming in, are you going to choose the stadium that's new and doesn't have an NFL team tearing up its field, or are you going to choose the LA Galaxy, which does have an NFL team that plays there and could possibly impact the games? What, you know, you're already fighting an uphill battle here. You know, which way are people
exactly.
going to go? All right.
That comes in for the casual.
That is.
I'm an LA Galaxy fan since the beginning, so I'm not going anywhere.
That's good news. Good news. All right.
Yeah.
Perfect, Ronnie. Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in. All right.
Thanks.
All right. There we go. A great call. Great take. I want to hear if you got any more takes on this this Chargers third season. I don't know. Was it? It seemed like to me it's more palatable at two seasons. You're like, it's just two seasons. It's just two seasons. It's just two seasons. All right, and then all of a sudden now it's this third season. It's like going from detention where you only had to stay for 20 minutes to now you have to stay for like 30 minutes. And that extra time, you were counting on the 20 minutes. You were going to live with that. And then just before the 20 minutes is up, even though we haven't even really started playing, you're going to get that third. I'll be honest with you. With the way construction schedules go, fourth year is a possibility. That's an insight by me in terms of construction and not anything that I've heard. So I don't want you to go up to Chris Klein and say, but Josh said they're going to be here for 4 years. Okay, don't do that. Don't do Chris already has to deal with enough of my crap. All right. He doesn't need that. But I'm just saying 4 years isn't out of the realm of possibility. All right. All right. The sort of the upsides, again, the investment, right? So we talked about the $35 million invested since 2013. That's cool. I like it. The new 20-by-52-foot LED video board on the south side of the stadium. Let's see how that fits in. I have just this weird feeling that it's going to make the stadium feel smaller if there's a bigger video board over there, but maybe it'll be sized correctly. So let's wait to see how that looks. The upper sideline, I actually like this part. The upper sideline, that upper section on the east side of the stadium is getting new tip-up seating in those seats. It's just benches right now, so that'll do it. And they're upgrading suites. And I'm sure everybody who listens to me buys a suite every time. So you'll really enjoy those upgraded suites. And then the upgraded club seating in like the main center field, center of the field seats there. I think it's, I forget which sections. Is it like 110 to 108? Or no, it's not 108. I'm 108. It's like 110, 111, 112, 113 maybe right in there. So they're doing those club seating upgrades. So that is sort of the LA Galaxy team news in terms of what is going on, what is happening with the stadium. I wanted to go over those two things. Those seem like most important things to me. Giovanni Dos Santos, it doesn't look like he's going to miss any Galaxy games. So let's, you know, some people would argue maybe that's a good thing. I'm of the opinion that the LA Galaxy need Giovanni Dos Santos to be good if you're going to keep him. All right. Other topics you can call in on if you want to. Kurt Anolfo, him winning, good or bad? I'd love to know what you think. Is this good news for the LA Galaxy because winning is the only thing that's going to save this team? Or is it bad because Kurt Anolfo isn't the coach that you want coaching the LA Galaxy? All right. So hit me up on the phone, please. 949-734-4217 as we get closer to getting ready for this next game. LA Galaxy 2 news, some fun stuff here. LA Galaxy 2 get the road win over New York Red Bulls 2. They played immediately after the LA Galaxy senior team played the New York Red Bulls senior team at Red Bull Arena. The twos go out there. They battle it out despite the fact that LA Galaxy 2 went down 1-0 in the third minute. They came back, a penalty kick converted by Adonis Amaya, and a 72nd goal from Justin Dillon pulled them ahead and led to their eventual victory, 2-1. I don't remember the last time both LA Galaxy 2 and LA Galaxy 1, and not only that, but that they traveled together and played on the same field and all that stuff happened. And so some really good stuff there. They got outshot. But they put more shots on target, so they were better with their shots. You know, it's some good things. LA Galaxy 2 head coach Mike Munoz said on the team collecting 3 points, I quote, "I'm really, really happy for the team. Obviously, it's been a tough couple of weeks. We asked for a response. We asked for a reaction. Even going a goal down, the boys fought for 90 minutes, and we thoroughly deserve to get the 3 points today." On what he told the team at halftime, he said, "Stick to the game plan. We felt that because of the way the Red Bulls try to press, we needed to connect that first and second pass out of transition. But most importantly, if we can connect that first and second pass and we can move forward, we really think we can hurt them. And you saw it with the number of times we were able to get in behind today, and it was all because of that ability to play out of transition forward." Do you see a trend developing here in terms of how the LA Galaxy senior team play and how Mike Munoz down at LA Galaxy 2 plays? Are you starting to sort of feel that going? By the way, the LA Galaxy 2 started a lineup that had an average age of 19.7 years. 19.7 years. They're starting the kids younger. They're starting them in a place where they're overmatched. I mean, you look at some of these other teams, these are professional teams they're playing against. All right, and they're getting a professional education. Some of these kids are academy kids, 16, 17 years old, coming in and playing professional soccer. This pays off in the end. All right. We argue about the development league and how things develop in the United States and whether or not the United States is doing it correctly. If you're worried about results in leagues and academy games, if you're worried about results in LA Galaxy 2 games, you're missing the point. The point is to develop players. All right, to develop players, to develop that number 10, to develop that number 8 for your team, to develop the 9, the striker. You need to develop these guys. And sometimes that means going out there and letting them lose. Yes, letting them lose, learning how to do it. Watch LA Galaxy 2 and what Mike Munoz is able to do. All right, let's go to the phone lines again. 805, who's this?
What's up, Josh? This is Scott.
Scott, buddy, how are you doing?
Good. I wanted to comment on the Anolfo discussion.
Yes.
You kind of brought up. I personally don't think he's done a bad job. He, a coach in MLS, he didn't build this team. He's only playing the hand that he's been dealt. And I feel like all the player personnel decisions on the field have been kind of, you know, immaterial. Like Diaw versus Rowe, fine. Diallo versus Garcia versus Smith, fine. I feel like all those are washes. Maybe, you know, doing that weird thing with Gio up top and Zardes behind him is kind of weird, but I think that's more of a product of just not being able to trust Gio to be kind of consistent. But pulling Van Dam was the best thing that Anolfo could have done, and, you know, he did that. He had, you know, the balls to step up and stand up to his team. I think the only thing, other thing he can do is really, like, sit down Jones and Gio and Van Dam, you know, when Jones is healthy and, like, kind of lay out, define specific roles that they have to follow and have to execute. And if they don't, then pull them out. But if he can't do that because manager says you have to play Gio, you have to play Jones, then what can he do? Like, I don't understand why we're criticizing Anolfo. There's no reason to criticize Anolfo. I agree with Wendy that you pretty much have to criticize the front office more than anybody else.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's one of my biggest points of contention is that Anolfo is playing the guys he has available. I will say this, though, Scott, and the reason that I was for them letting go of Anolfo if they decided to do it, if he would have lost to Philadelphia, which I think could have possibly triggered that, if they would have lost to Chicago, I think could have triggered that as well, is because he had lost the team. Right. And that's something that it's his job, no matter who's there, that he has to keep this team together and that they believe in him. And up to a certain point, he had lost them, probably because he didn't sit Von Dom and Jones, or that he didn't assert his attitude or his personality on that team up until the first half of that Chicago Fire game. And so, you know, you can look at him and say he was too timid in the first 8-9 games. But if he's going to continue this way, which, by the way, benching Von Dom seems to have fixed the locker room. And I don't know, it's tough because sometimes I forget of how much people don't live this, Scott, and how much I do live it. But I try to find out what's going in the locker room on a constant daily basis in terms of how the guys are feeling and how they're not feeling and whether they're feeling good or bad or if they don't like Anolfo or if they do like Anolfo and how it went. And I will tell you, before that Chicago game, the locker room was decidedly against him. And the fact that he was able to bring it back means that he should be given more time to develop this team. And if you're going to get results like the second half in Chicago and like New York, granted, those are, it's three halves of soccer, right? I mean, it's 135 minutes. It's not that much of a sample size there. But if he's able to do that, then there's no reason right now why he shouldn't be able to stay. He needs to get wins because that is part of it, Scott. But I tend to lean more towards you that it's a front office issue more than it is an Anolfo issue.
I don't know if I really agree with what you're trying to say there. These guys are highly, highly paid professionals. And it's their job to go out and execute. It's Jermaine Jones's job to play center mid. It's Van Damme's job to play center defense. And if these guys won't, you know, if you don't like your boss, you don't just say, oh, I don't like the boss, I'm not going to play for him, the boss is fired, and I'll get a new boss. Oh, that's awesome. That's just not the way the world works. And plus, maybe just the players know that, you know, Arnolfo doesn't have any power and the front office has the power and they'll continue to be played. And that's why that they can kind of have that attitude and not execute the game plan and they can do what they want and disrespect the coach. Maybe that kind of corroborates your point. But I don't know. Like, what if he was fired and they promoted Raza for Munoz? I mean, I don't know these people personally, but are they the types that are going to be just much more gung-ho and more of a jock and they're going to tell Ashley Cole, World Cup veteran, what to do?
Yeah.
I mean, if that, I don't know. Are they going to hire like a European guy who doesn't know what the expansion draft is or, you know, the draft or whatever else?
Right.
I just don't understand. These players just need to do what they're paid to do. And Anolfo is doing everything that he is able to do with what he has.
I will say this, that in your office, your boss is probably your highest paid person, right? And so I hope so too. Even in my family business, I better work that way, right? In this place, and it's always been that way in sports, is that your coach isn't your highest paid asset. And so the value that's placed on the coach a lot of times isn't the same as the value that's placed on, you know, Yella Von Dom. And it gets to the point. And it gets to the point too where, and this is the same across all sports, and Kevin says this all the time, is you can't fire 28 players. But you can fire one coach, and that can change things. Look at the Seattle last year, and I hate to even talk about them because I don't like that, but Siggy Schmidt lost that team, right? And how did Siggy Schmidt lose that team? You're talking about a guy who's in the upper echelon of American soccer coaches and has been worshipped in Major League Soccer for a very long time. So how did he lose that locker room? But he did. Do you think Brian Schmetzer is a better coach than Siggy Schmidt?
I don't know. Do you know how he lost the team? Like, I don't remember how he lost.
It ends up being, hey, the guys don't believe in it anymore. It ends up being, you know, the same thing over and over again. And granted, Anolfo has a short window here, but he's coming in and trying to prove himself. If he loses the team, if he's not going to hold players accountable, see, as much as players think that, you know, players want to believe that every position is up for competition, right? Because otherwise, if you're a lower player, why would you stick around knowing that you're never going to play? Right, you want to know
it's not up for position. It's not. Jones is going to start.
he can. He can start, right? But that's the thing, is that at least what they want from Anolfo and what they did with Von Dom was show that if you don't do well, that he's going to hold you accountable. And that means he's going to pull you out of the game. And he put Dave Romney in there. Do we think Dave Romney saved that game? Dave Romney was great in that game. But, you know, the attitude shift didn't come from the fact that Yella Von Dom was just playing like crap and had for most of the season up until this point, right? It came from the fact that the players now believed in Anolfo, that they said, hey, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. You could be Giovanni Dos Santos, all right? And if you're not playing, then Kurt's going to bench you. He's just tired of it. He's had enough. This is it. And you could hear it from some veteran players that Anolfo taking that tact with Yella Von Dom was enough to immediately win him brownie points, enough to the point where the team fought and won for him. And it's all about belief in a single thing, right? You want that coach to be able to get everybody to focus. And if there's one bad apple in there, or two bad apples, like perhaps lots of people have suggested with Jermaine Jones and Von Dom, not paying attention to game plans and not doing what the coach had laid out and sort of trying to do whatever they wanted, if there's two in there, it can totally derail a team. Athletes are fragile, fragile egos, Scott. I don't know how else to tell you.
That's true.
They're the most fragile people on the face of this earth sometimes, all right? They'll get mad at a tweet. They get mad at some fan who says something, despite the fact the whole stadium maybe, but it's just that one fan, they get upset. They have fragile egos, and so you have to understand that if they feel like they're being disrespected, or quite honestly, even with Van Damme, if they feel like they're not being pushed, then Van Damme's going to cruise. He's not going to play that hard.
Yeah.
What does he care, right? But so I agree with you in a lot of points, though. I still agree with you that I think that Anolfo has done enough to deserve to continue. But my question is, and I'm going to let you go because you've been awesome. I've already had you on for a while. But my basic question, yeah, thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. But my question, you know, really starts to fall on now is that if Anolfo starts winning, what does that mean for the LA Galaxy? Are you guys still convinced that he's not the coach for the LA Galaxy and you want somebody else? Does winning just delay the problem? I mean, these are the questions that you have to ask. I will tell you right now, the best thing for the LA Galaxy, and you can't argue this, I'm right. It's great. It's great. First of all, I don't have to take any more calls, so I can be right however I want to be right. So I'm going to tell you, I'm right on this, is that if the Galaxy start winning and they start doing things that involve, that keep this team going, and they're successful, and they're successful under Anolfo, and this plan that the front office laid out at the beginning of the year falls through, and it's exactly what you need, and the LA Galaxy get in the playoffs, and they make their run, and they head towards MLS Cup. If all of that happens, that's the best thing that can happen for the LA Galaxy, because that means you're not rebuilding, you're not starting over, you're not having to reload or do anything else. That's what that means. That's the best scenario, is that Kurt Anolfo is ridiculously successful, and he's the second coming of Bruce Arena. That's what... If you're saying your LA Galaxy prayers at night, that's what you should be praying for, is that Kurt Anolfo is the second coming of Bruce Arena. Because that's the best thing for the Galaxy. Now, if that doesn't happen, if you don't get the wins and you don't get that climb, then is holding Kurt more of a detriment to the club? And eventually that delays a change that could have been changed before. That's where we sort of get into these different things. I know we've sort of dwelled on that a little more than we probably could. Let's go on and talk a little LA Galaxy 2 news real quick. We talked about their win. Also, heads up, LA Galaxy 2 have signed Alejandro Covarrubias. He's back. Covarrubias is the all-time appearance leader for LA Galaxy 2. But in December, he was signed by OKC Energy FC. He went there, and then he came back. I don't know if the situation wasn't great. I sort of asked around a little bit to find out what was going on, but it seems like it just didn't work out. So Covarrubias is back. I will tell you why this is a good thing. I always had him pegged as one of the guys who could possibly make the move up. All right, so getting him back in LA Galaxy 2 will get us to reevaluate that and sort of take a look. The LA Galaxy continued their road trip. As we look at the LA Galaxy schedule, they have Minnesota on Sunday. Then next Saturday, May 27th, a game I will be covering. It is LA Galaxy away at Avaya Stadium against the San Jose Earthquakes, who drew with Orlando midweek. Watch that game. They probably should have lost that game. Wondolowski had one of those poacher goals, you know. It was, you know, whatever. And then the LA Galaxy go away on Saturday, June 3rd, to DC United before coming home to host the Houston Dynamo and Edge of De La Garza. We talked about on June 17th. And then it is June 21st, an away game as they go away to the Colorado Rapids on a midweek game, Wednesday, June 21st. I believe that's the first midweek game for the LA Galaxy, 6 p.m. Pacific kickoff time. And then Saturday, June 24th, as we sort of round out June 2017, a 7:30 p.m. game against Sporting Kansas City at home. Sporting KC, one of the best clubs in Major League Soccer. So we'll see if that continues over the next five, six games and what they'll look like whenever they come into StubHub Center. LA Galaxy sit in seventh place. Sporting Kansas City in first place in the Western Conference, 22 points, 12 games played. The LA Galaxy have 11 points, so half the points, and only 10 games played, all right? So LA Galaxy, besides FC Dallas, who has only played 9 games, LA Galaxy at 10 games, Vancouver Whitecaps at 10 games, and then Colorado Rapids at 10 games. So everybody else has 11 games, and where it stands, LA Galaxy moved up a little bit, 16th place, now in front of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams. DC United below them, Minnesota United, Real Salt Lake, Montreal Impact, Seattle Sounders, and Colorado Rapids. You'll hear DC United and Minnesota are actually part of the next two games or next three games for the LA Galaxy. So a chance again for some road points. Let's see how the LA Galaxy do. MLS games to watch. We always have you watch the opponents the week before you play them. Make sure that you watch the DC United game playing against Chicago. So DC United will host Chicago at 1 p.m. Pacific time on Saturday, May 20th. And then whenever that game is over, you can watch the San Jose Earthquakes as they travel to FC Dallas at 5 p.m. Pacific time. So those are your two games to watch right now. Injuries are all pretty much the same. We had Sebastian Legette, we have Jermaine Jones, and we have Clement Diop, who's sort of day-to-day. We'll wait to see if what his exact position is and how everything goes. And so I know you guys expect greatness from me at all times, and I appreciate your vote of confidence. So I really, really, really want to know, or I really want you to give me a little bit of a break tonight, as I just flew in and didn't have a great chance to really get my LA Galaxy preview, like, all set and really good. There is going to be no epic preview. It's the LA Galaxy will take on Minnesota United on Sunday, May 21st, 2017, 2 p.m. This game can be found on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. Minnesota United is 3-6-2, 11 points, 11 games played, 8th in the Western Conference and 18th overall in the Supporters Shield standings. LA Galaxy, coming off a 3-1 victory over the New York Red Bulls, are 3-5-2, 11 points, 10 games played, 7th in the Western Conference and just 16th overall, climbing up that ladder. Minnesota's last game was a 3-2 loss at Toronto FC, a game they were very, very competitive in. Minnesota United, in their first four games, gave up 18 goals. That's when you look at the goal differential, start scratching your head and say, oh my God, that's a lot of goals. However, a much improved Minnesota United team over their last seven games. They've allowed just 10 goals and got all three wins in those last seven games. The LA Galaxy are 2-2-0 on the road. They look to take on, of course, a very dangerous and a much better Minnesota United team, with Christian Ramirez having 6 goals and 1 assist and Kevin Molino 5 goals. Minnesota is not the same team that got run over at the beginning of the year, and the LA Galaxy will now travel there looking for more points on the road. We said in this road trip, could the LA Galaxy come away with 4 points? That seemed impossible. But with 3 points against the New York Red Bulls, the LA Galaxy could continue their win streak. They are unbeaten in 3 and now look to go unbeaten in 4 with a 2-game winning streak, and could possibly push their road total right now to 6 points in these 4 games. It's a huge, huge game. Again, an ESPN game. Something I'm looking very, very forward to. A Sunday kickoff, which is always nice. A nationally televised game, which is always nice. And for the LA Galaxy and the lineup that they're expecting, don't expect much to change besides Bradley Diallo, who will probably be coming out of that right back role because, of course, he'll be suspended. Nathan Smith should slot in there. Other than that, don't expect things to change. Baggio Husidic in the center, Joao Pedro next to him. You're going to have Emmanuel Boateng out on the left, Roman Alessandrini on the right. You're 2 stacked at the top, with Yossi Zardes taking the above position, and Giovanni Dos Santos probably playing more underneath, although as we talked earlier in this show, look for that to start roaming. Giovanni Dos Santos is a roamer. Let him roam right now. Let him find some space, some little pockets here and there, but keep him involved in this game, all right? The one thing I can say about Minnesota United, granted, TFC Bank Stadium should be, you know, a lot of fun. My good friend Kristen is actually going to go to that game, so hopefully she's listening to this podcast on her way and then, you know, freaks out and tells her friend who she's taking for the first time. I know that guy. But anyway, they're headed to the game. So enjoy this game. It's going to be interesting to see what Minnesota team shows up. I mean, they played Toronto FC, who has 6 wins in a row and did it all in something like 21 days or some ridiculous feat like that. And they took that TFC team, you know, to the very breaking point. Toronto ended up winning 3-2. You know, you got good goals out of Minnesota, but the Minnesota defense is something that you can take advantage of. You have Bobby Shuttleworth in goal. You know, the defenders with Mark Birch and Francisco Calvo and Brent Kalman. And then Jerome Thiessen. These are guys the LA Galaxy can take advantage of. And if you're going to get a good game out of João Pedro and Baggio Cidic, this is the game to do it. Take care of Molino, who plays in the midfield there. Take care of Ibarra, Christian Ramirez. Listen, Ramirez can score any goal at any time. So the Galaxy need to watch the counters and how they sort of play that. But this is not... Yes, it was probably the most winnable game the Galaxy had on their schedule when they started this road trip. I will tell you right now that a draw in this game is very, very acceptable. All right, did you like my sort of impromptu recap there, my intro, my exciting intro? I hope I got everybody pumped up for that because I'm about done for this show. All right, again, the LA Galaxy looking for their second win in a row, playing game 2 of 4 on the road. Is a very important game, just as all of these have been. Go to cornerthegalaxy.com. You can see our charts that tell you where the Galaxy are in terms of wins. I will tell you right now, a win again against Minnesota United, something that I thought would probably be unfathomable before they beat the New York Red Bulls and sort of continued this momentum they had in Chicago, a win would do a lot in the standings, possibly even put them into a playoff position, all right? So that's where the LA Galaxy are looking. I know it's early. I know it's going to be 11 games after this Minnesota United game, and I know that you're saying, Josh, the playoffs, being in a playoff position doesn't matter. But for a team that was much maligned about being as bad as they were because they were awful and as low as they were in the standings, to even sniff that red line right now means a lot. It means a lot to them. It means a lot to fans. It means a lot to, you know, the job stability of Kurt Arnolfo as well. So all of those things sort of combined really are important for this LA Galaxy team right now. It is all about mental attitude. And work rate. The LA Galaxy can outwork any team right now. They're young enough to do that. That you can see. So let's see them outwork Minnesota United on the road. Again, don't expect them to have a bunch of possession, but at the same time, Minnesota likes to play a countering attack. Then if that's the case, maybe the Galaxy will have more possession than they can. But be safe on defense. Defense first mentality for me. Yelena Von Dom, that means you stay home. Ashley Cole, you'll get forward, but come back a lot. Daniel Stares needs to have another good game, which I thought he had a good game against New York Red Bulls. And whoever slots in at that right back position, thinking it's Nathan Smith, you know, they're going to have a good game. That's where they're going to be attacking, all right? All those guys that we talked about, the dangerous guys from Minnesota United, you want to get them, and they're going to watch them funnel towards the right side of the LA Galaxy defense. Watch them go after Smith and Stares on that right-hand side. So, and then cut the ball back and try to find some space above Von Dom and above Stares, all right? All right. Did we have fun? Did we enjoy it? Did this hour-long conversation go just so much faster than you ever thought it would be? I had a great time. I don't know about you. It was fun for me, all right? So what we're going to do, we're going to get out of here. Thank you for joining me on this this solo edition. I always think these are going to be difficult, and you guys always pull through and do some really great things for me. So everybody in the chat room, thank you. Everybody who tweeted at me, thank you. I'm going to try to stay alive. I am actually back on an airplane tomorrow morning, so I'll be watching this game, this next game on Sunday from Denver. I'll be back on Monday night, possibly Tuesday night. I think it might be pushed to Tuesday because Kevin's got Ducks hockey again, still covering that. All right. That about does it for me. LA Galaxy face off against Minnesota United, 2 p.m. Sunday, ESPN, ESPN Deportes. All right, I'm Josh Gessman. You've been listening to Corner of the Galaxy on cornerofthegalaxy.com. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.
You've been listening to the Corner of the Galaxy podcast on cornerofthegalaxy.com. You can follow the show on Twitter and Instagram at Galaxy Podcast. And be sure to check out and subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, and Facebook by searching for Corner of the Galaxy. And for all of your independent LA Galaxy news, discussion, and entertainment, including this podcast, head on over to cornerofthegalaxy.com. Fans, thanks for listening. We ask that you be kind and courteous to your neighbors as you leave the podcast. We thank you for joining us and look forward to seeing you again. Until then, I'm Michael Araujo, and on behalf of the entire Corner of the Galaxy crew, Goodbye, everybody.